several news articles, and what I'll probably do is just read the headlines of so many, because what's been happening in the news recently over here is the fact that there has been a budget this last week. And this one from Thursday, it says Brown's tax cut trick. And basically he goes into the way in which this budget, although it gives the impression this happens going off the rate of income tax, and how the base rate of income tax is going to be cut by 2%. What they then didn't really put forward as what was going to actually happen was the fact that the actual lowest rate, which was 10%, was going to be abolished. So it made no difference whatsoever to people. In fact, for people that were just edging into the tax bracket, it was actually worse off. Another one, this is from before the budget, I believe, on Tuesday, March the 6th. It says taxes are at the highest level for 20 years. Another one, Brown heads for his 100th tax rise. And really, when you look at the money situation and the money generally, there are so many things there as far as the money is concerned that even looking across in America, I was looking at an article on the internet the other day. And it mentioned there part of the Constitution, which I didn't know anything about. And part of the Constitution actually states, it says, no state shall make anything but gold and silver coin a tender in payments of debts. That's part of the American Constitution. They are not allowed to go ahead and make any kind, it says, no state shall make anything but gold and silver coin a tender in payment of debts. So if you're tendering payment of debts, you've got to use gold and silver. Or a creditory note which was backed up by gold and silver, so that somebody can go to the bank and get gold and silver coin as a result of that note. And the states weren't allowed to go ahead and use anything else. And what in fact then happened later on, in fact, that was the Constitution of the United States over in 1789, and that is actually in Article 1, Section 10, if anybody wants to go and have a look at it. In 1792, Congress, they actually had a coinage act which defined the dollar as a measurement of gold and silver, and counterfeiting was a capital crime punishable by death. So anybody that actually devalues the coinage was faced the death penalty. Andrew Jackson later on told the bankers, you're a den of vipers, and intend to root you out by the eternal God. I'll root you out, because they were trying to go away from that standard. And eventually, back in 1913, the bankers finally managed to get the Federal Reserve System, a central bank, organized in the American states, installed in the American states. And what in fact then happened was there were two things that came in. One was a graduated income tax, which again was illegal according to the Constitution, foisted on the people through an amendment. And then also it began issuing notes payable to the bearer on demand as lawful money. When you come to 1928, there was another series of notes issued, which were actually, again, said that I'll pay the bearer on demand, but everything was made very much smaller. And then by the time 1933 came along, Roosevelt actually called in all the gold, because of the Depression and everything else, called in all gold, banned Americans from owning gold at all. So the only all they could own was the banknote that said, I'll promise to pay the bearer on demand. Once he had all the gold, which was $20 an ounce, he declared that the gold was now $35 an ounce. So he sat on this great big pile, and government sat on this great big pile of money, and everybody else had a 50% cut in their value of all their assets. You know, really, when we look at what's happened, and we look at these things that are happening today, and we see the way in which, as it is brought out within the paper, it's a confidence trick. It is actually smoke and mirrors. In fact, it's mentioning many times in the paper how there was really a case of smoke and mirrors in this last budget. But this is going on all the time. And really, Satan is the father of lies. When you turn over to John chapter 8, he talks about him being a murderer from the beginning here in John chapter 8, verse 44. It says in verse 43, It says, why do you not understand my speech? Why can't somebody understand what Christ is actually saying? And when you look at this book and the value of finance and how the shekel was to be made very, very clear, and it was tied actually into the value of land according to the barley that would be grown on that land. And so if you improve the actual productivity of the land, your land would therefore increase in value. But no, none of the land was to be sold. I mean, there's so many rules and laws that have been subverted by man. But it says, why can't you understand my speech? Even because you can't hear my word. You can't bear to hear what Christ was saying. He says, you're of your father, the devil, and the lusts of your father you will do. He was a murderer from the beginning, and he did not abide in the truth, because there's no truth in him. When he speaks a lie, he speaks of his own, for he's a liar, and he's the father of it. This is where the present system is coming from, and this is where so many of these things are coming from. In particular, when you're looking at the legislation that you see coming through, and various elements, particularly in this area of budget, it is a case of smoke and mirrors, and this is what we've just found this last week. What I'd like to do today, actually, is a little bit different. I'd like to play something, which is why my the hymns actually didn't quite work out as I thought. But if I'd like to play something from which I heard on the radio this morning, which I think would be quite interesting to you.
It's time for Thought for the Day, and with us this morning is the Reverend Dr. Giles Fraser, who is the Vicar of Putney. Good morning, Giles.
Morning, John. Most of us are familiar with the story of Noah's Ark. Many, however, are unfamiliar with the story that follows. One of the first things that Noah does when he finds dry land is to have a drink or two. Perhaps that's understandable. But he ends up drunk and naked, stumbling around his tent without a great deal of human dignity. This somewhat embarrassing scene is chanced upon by Ham, one of Noah's three sons. And in what seems to have been a drunken rage, Noah curses Ham and his son Canaan. This curse was to create a biblical alibi for one of the great moral evils of human history, for Noah curses his child and grandchild with slavery. For centuries, the curse of Ham, along with several other biblical passages, would be referred to as justification for depriving millions of human beings of their liberty. People were turned into things to be bought and sold, and for the most part, men and women of faith saw nothing wrong with this at all. Which is why I'm a little uncomfortable at the way we readily commemorate the abolition of the transatlantic slave trade through the memory of people like Wilberforce. William Wilberforce was a man of great courage and dedication. His faith remains an inspiration to many. But we invoke his name too cheaply unless first we acknowledge the complicity between Bible-reading Christians and the support for slavery. It's too easy just to applaud a radical cause that was won 200 years ago.
I thought that would be interesting for you to hear, because it gives an indication, on the surface, how many people would know what that actual account within Genesis talks about? Almost nobody. So what it is presented by this particular vicar in the way in which it's been presented. Turn over to Genesis 9. Turn over to Genesis 9. Because another thing that's going on in the news today is this abolition of the slave trade. Was it 200 years since the abolition of the slave trade? So this also, many of the articles that are appearing today, and this is one of the articles that actually appeared, which I thought I may as well play. But it says that he was drunk with the wine in verse 21, and he was drunken and he was uncovered within his tent. This is Genesis 9, verse 22 now. And Ham, the father of Canaan, saw the nakedness of his father, and told his two brethren outside. And Shem and Japheth took a garment and laid it upon their shoulders, and went backwards, and covered the nakedness of their father, and their faces were backwards, and they didn't see their father's nakedness. Noah awoke from his wine, and knew what his younger son had done unto him. And he said, cursed be not Ham, but Canaan. Now, the understanding within the church is that there was something far, far more going on than just what appears on the surface. And when we're looking at cursed be Canaan, a servant of servants, or a slave of slaves shall he be to his brethren. And he said, blessed be the eternal God of Shem, and Canaan shall be his servant. And God shall enlarge Japheth, and he will dwell in the tents of Shem, and Canaan shall be his servant. This isn't the words of some drunkard just yelling at the top of his voice. It's total fabrication. This is a prophecy given by God through Noah regarding the major nations and how the nations would then transpire from there. and yet notice what was happening. And what in fact, how was it presented? It was presented, any Bible-reading Christian has this kind of distorted view of life, and therefore will have a distorted view of reality. And again, you're looking at the same kind of thing. You're looking at what we've just read over in John, where the Satan is the father of lies. He's the one who actually allows the lies to generate. And when we're looking in what we see today, there are so many areas where this is true. Let me read a few headlines over the last couple of weeks. It says, the Passport Inquisition. British citizens will be quizzed on up to 200 different pieces of personal information in a 30-minute grilling when they want a passport. It was revealed yesterday. Now, that's being promoted and being put forward, although the news is actually, many papers are decrying it. It's being put forward because of terrorism. But again, you're looking at smoke and mirrors. It says, holders of British passports, even the EU-friendly claret-coloured ones introduced in 95, will bask in the comforting knowledge that Britannic Majesty's Secretary of State requests and requires all those that may concern to allow the barrier to pass freely, without let or hindrance. And then it goes on, it talks about that the new passports, issued no longer by the Passport Office, but by the Orwellian-sounding Identity and Passport Service, the IPS, will be a little more than a template for the new national ID card, which, of course, has been thrown out, but they want to bring it in by the back door. And the kind of questions they're talking about is something like, what was your mother's maiden name? What's her birthday? In which town was your father born? What's your national insurance number? What's the registration number of your family car? What's the occupation of the person who kind of signed your application? How long have you known him, her? Is the sort code of your bank? You notice these questions. What are they like? They're the kind of questions that you get when you put in passwords online computer access or whatever, and all this information will be there readily available. And on you go. A spy camera can see you put the bin out on the wrong day. In other words, we don't want people putting bins out on the wrong day, and the spy cameras, householders who keep putting their bins out on the wrong day could be caught by secret spy cameras hidden in tin cans and bricks and branded enviro-criminals. And they could actually be fined as a result of this. Another one. Was speed camera study scrapped to save face? Ministers have secretly dumped a study into whether the speed cameras are making the roads safer. It emerged last night. So in other words, they've obviously found out that no, it doesn't, because people look down at the speedometer and that's when accidents occur. But they don't take it away. Why? Because there's a revenue stream that comes from them. One from the States. The presidential hopefuls face a trial by YouTube. YouTube, the video-sharing website, is fast becoming one of the most influential forces in the US presidential campaign, as users expose gaffes or reinforce the credentials of candidates outside the control of their own teams. However, let me just say that I heard a report and I was actually sent a petition to be signed, which I hadn't signed because I'm not going to get involved. But the petition was to stop the government from banning photographs in public places unless you had a certificate or a license to do so. And again, why would they do that? Because of this kind of thing, because you can post it on the website and there's nothing that they can do about it. And on it goes. Another one, it's interesting, that particular incident about the passport office. We find out now that Cameron's spin team made up the rift with Bush. It says David Cameron's advisors fabricated disagreements with George Bush to try to win favour with the British voters, a senior US government official claims. So again, we see this kind of spin. It is going throughout all of the government. It's not just the government, it's the opposition and the whole political structure. Blue Peter says sorry for faking a winner of a phone-in. Home sales are gridlocked, but it doesn't say anything about the fact that you've got singles and divorced people, and the increase in that is causing this problem. Benefits are destroying family life. University education could really cost an arm and a leg. In other words, people that are only going to be allowed into education, to the higher education, I say, if they fall within certain criteria, and they're going to have, they're trying to weight the number of people so that the people that have already had an education through their parents, in other words, they come from the homes where the parents have been graduates, will have a disadvantage in actually their application. Even the hospital, when you go to hospitals today over here in the UK, the cost of parking at the hospital, they've come out at £95 million. That's what they've made. And if you go to a hospital, you will find that the parking fees are horrendous. And again, they're making money. Why? Because they need the money. Therefore, the government allows them to do that. Even something, there's a Francis Bacon, who's apparently a famous impressionist artist, was throwing out some art, and the electrician was working at the studios. He managed to retrieve it from a skip, and it's now worth £500,000. Well, if it was going in a skip, it's not worth £500,000. There's a bank swindle as well. Somebody was working undercover, and the article was about the swindle that was there regarding the bank. Let me just give you another. I'll play another piece that I think that you might find very, very interesting. Again, this was immediately after this thought for the day that I've just played. And this next one was to do with the EU, because we're living here in UK under the EU. And I want to just notice when the EU signing was actually made. Let's just see if we can have this one.
You sometimes hear Eurosceptics complain that signing up to the European Union is like signing a blank cheque, which allows Brussels to draw as much power as it wants away from Westminster. Well, that could be closer than anyone had imagined, according to some evidence uncovered by our colleague Alan Little. Alan's been making a Radio 4 documentary to mark the 50th anniversary of the Treaty of Rome, and he's uncovered some intriguing details about what really happened 50 years ago tomorrow.
There's a wooded park on the outskirts of Brussels with a little lake that's teeming with ducks and swans and geese, an unexpected rural idyll not far from Europe's soulless institutional capital, with a solid, unlovely country house called the Château de Valduchesse. This is where they wrote the Treaty of Rome. In the stately ground floor rooms, the architects of the new Europe were determined federalists in pursuit of full-blooded political union. Richard Main was then a young British journalist who became a lifelong supporter of the European idea.
The governments were able to say to their electorates, oh, this is purely economic. And we knew there was never any secret that the end was political.
They laboured for 9 months, transforming themselves into a new kind of officialdom. These were the first of the Eurocrats. And they set a certain, now familiar, tone. They worked beyond the gaze of public scrutiny, often in secrecy and without reference to public opinion. The French were the first Eurosceptics. Jean-François Poncet was a French diplomat.
The French economy was not in a very competitive situation. And we wondered how we could eliminate the protections at our border without being overwhelmed by, for instance, Germany.
By March 1957, there was trouble brewing. France was at war in Algeria, and it was going badly. Everyone knew it was just a matter of time before General de Gaulle returned to power, and he had vowed to kill the treaty stone dead. The Eurocrats at Valduchesse wanted it agreed, signed, and ratified before that happened. They gathered in Rome in such haste that the Italian state printer had not met the deadline. The treaty was not printed. And so, in great ceremony and solemnity, six heads of government put their signatures that day to a treaty that was, apart from the title page at the front and the signature page at the back, composed entirely of blank pages. Pierre Pescatore from Luxembourg was one of the lawyers that wrote the treaty.
They signed a bundle of blank pages. The first, the title existed in four languages, and also the protocol at the end. Nobody looked at what was in between.
They didn't show that to the television cameras, and the European train that pulled out that day is still rolling.
Alan Little, and you can hear more about that story on the road to Rome.
Well, I thought that was very interesting. The fact that 50 years ago, and they're celebrating this anniversary now, and 50 years ago when they signed the papers, there was nothing actually there. It was all smoke and mirrors. And because they couldn't get the thing ratified in time. They couldn't get it printed, sorry, in time, but they had to go ahead and get the thing signed because they could see on the horizon that the French under Charles de Gaulle weren't going to allow it, and so they pushed the thing through. And we see it today in exactly the same way. If we go back to John chapter 8, in John chapter 8, it's interesting because you've got this these articles appearing on slavery. You got these articles appearing as far as the budget is concerned, the smoke and mirrors that we see today, and you've got this EU signing and the anniversary of the EU signing. The whole thing is smoke and mirrors. The whole thing is a fabrication. And it says here in verse 33, well, Christ actually says to them, it says in verse 30, he spoke to them these words when many believed on him. In other words, they accepted what he said in as far as his words were concerned, but they didn't believe him. It says, and Jesus said to them which believed on him, if you continue in my word, then you're my disciples indeed, and you'll know the truth, and the truth shall make you free. And they said, we are Abraham's seed. We are never in bondage to any man. How do you say we're made free? And Christ answered them and said, truly, truly, I say to you, whoever commits sin is the slave of sin. And the slave is not going to stay in the house forever, but the son will stay there forever. And those that have that same mindset living in them as well, by inference, will be there forever. And it is just interesting when you look at the news. I say it's a very, very short news analysis this time, and I had enough to go quite easily by an hour if I read the actual news articles. But I thought it was interesting how these three areas, the slave trade, the budget, and the EU signing, all have relevance in this past week, and they all exhibit the same thing, the smoke and mirrors, and the confusion that is there within the world.